KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
Why do you continuously keep going to police stations and jails? I can assure you that if you didn't do it, women's rights would come. They will come without you. With you there, they may come only an hour earlier. So, why do you have to leave us? But I think we are all fighting for that hour earlier.
That hour earlier. Aisha Jalal, in these last 20 seconds, what you'll tell your students today at Tufts?
I think she's a model to be understood and followed and emulated by those who really want to pursue a career in human rights. But even for those who are committed to enhancing democratic dynamics in their countries, I think Asma is somebody that we can all take a leaf from.
Aisha Jalal, Mary Richardson, Professor of History at Tufts University and the Fletcher School, close personal friend of Asma Jahangir, who died of a heart attack this weekend in Lahore, Pakistan, where she lived.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of Big Pharma on Sunday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Big Pharma examines the problem of extreme drug prices in the U.S. and how drug prices impact business, the public, and the overall U.S. economy. The film will be followed by a discussion with Oregon State Representative Rob Noose. Again, that's the screening of Big Pharma on Sunday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm. on the right-hand side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and the Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community radio is radio for the people, by the people. At KBOO, your neighbors, coworkers, and friends make radio so you can be sure that the issues they bring to you are the issues that matter. We believe strong communities invest in sharing knowledge with each other. Every month, KBOO offers free classes in the art of radio broadcasting so Portland can stay informed. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO, Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM, your community radio station, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.fm on your World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, February 12th. 2018. And those who are history nerds are aware that in 1926, Carter G. Woodson and his organization began observing Negro History Week, the second week in February, to coincide with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln on February 12th and Frederick Douglass on February 14th. 1976 Negro History Week expanded after some prompting by young activists, college students, who on their respective college campuses expanded the observance from one week to 1 month. And in 1976, President Ford expanded that to Black History Month. So that's your moment in Black history for today. I hope you are observing and learning and finding ways in which to support the movement of Black peoples in the Americas, and living out the calling and the conviction that Black lives matter. Today's lesson, I would like to continue a conversation that she was able to facilitate last week during the conversation we had about the Poor People's Campaign. And for those of you who were away last week, we had a live interview with a rally that took place in Salem, Oregon, which coincided with rallies in 30-odd state capitals in the United States, announcing the Poor People's Campaign, which in some ways is an extension of the last organizing effort of Martin Luther King 50 years ago on the Poor People's Campaign. And among the conviction of that is the necessity of people on the margins, poor people, to become centralized in organizing a mass movement for change. This has taken place in various communities throughout the United States and throughout Oregon. Certainly, stay tuned. You will continue to hear more activities and more information about that. And again, you can go to the website, social media page, Poor People's Campaign, to find out more information about that. And we certainly will have more of that later for you, for those who are interested. But what we wanted to do was to extend the conversation about what it means to have people who have historically been on the margin to be central into the movement for social change. And so often we advocate for change, and those of us with privilege somehow not only take the stage, but are also centered in the movement itself. What does it mean for a revolution to come up from the bottom, if you will, and for those voices to raise, and for those with privilege to step aside, shut up, listen, and follow the leadership of those on the margins. As our conversation continues, I want to encourage you to call and share your thoughts. Our phone numbers here are 503-231-8187. I want to begin with an article that was written by Mia McKenzie, who has a web, a blog, and I'm trying to recall, Black Girls Dangerous. And this article she wrote about 4 or 5 years ago, but continues to resonate with many people. And so Mia McKenzie wrote these words. It's not long, but it's a blog which I hope will get the juices thing moving in our minds, and I encourage you to share your thoughts and comments. So Mia McKenzie wrote, "I'm kind of over the term ally, between Tim Wah's recent but not new BS, a recent visit to a college where some so-called allies don't even understand basic racism 101, and the constant cookie-seeking of people who just can't do the right thing unless they are sure they're gonna get some kind of credit for it, I'm done. Allyship is not supposed to look like this, folks. It's not supposed to be about you. It's not supposed to be about your feelings. It's not supposed to be a way of glorifying yourself at the expense of the folks you claim to be an ally to. It's not supposed to be a performance. It's supposed to be a way of living your life that doesn't reinforce the same oppressive behaviors you're claiming to be against. It's supposed to be about you doing the following things. 1. Shutting up and listening. 2. Educating yourself. You could start with the thousands of books and websites that already exist and are chock full of darn near everything anyone needs to know about most systems and practices of oppression. 3. When it's time to talk, not talking over the people you claim to be in solidarity with. 4. Accepting feedback, criticism about how your allyship is causing more harm than good without white-splaining, mansplaining, whatever-splaining. 5. Shutting up and listening some more. 6. Supporting groups, projects, organizations, etc. run by and for marginalized people so our voices get to be the loudest on the issues that affect us. 7. Not expecting marginalized people to provide emotional labor for you. This is by no means a comprehensive list, but most allies aren't even getting these things right. So henceforth, I will no longer use the term ally to describe anyone. Instead, I'll use the phrase currently operating in solidarity with, or something. I mean, yeah, it's clunky as hell, but it gets something that's the label of ally just doesn't. And that's this: actions count, labels don't. Currently operating in solidarity with is undeniably an action. It describes what a person is doing in the moment. It does not give credit for past acts of solidarity without regard for current behavior. It does not assume future acts of solidarity. It speaks only to the action of the present. Some other option? Showing support for. Operating with intentionality around. Using my privilege to help by. Demonstrating my commitment to ending insert oppressive system by. Showing up for insert marginalized group in the following ways. These are all better ways of talking about and thinking about allyships because they are active and because they require example. This is key. Why? Because as I and countless others have said many, many times, allyship is an everyday practice. The work of an ally is never ceasing as long as the isms are functioning, and they are functioning at full capacity every hour of every day. Then the action of allyship must function just as perpetually, just as fully, just as tirelessly. Ally cannot be a label that someone stamps onto you, or God forbid, that you stamp onto yourself, so you can then go around claiming it as some kind of identity. It is not an identity. It's a practice. It's an active thing that must be done over and over again in the largest and smallest ways every day. Sounds like a lot of work, huh? Sounds exhausting. Well, yeah, it ought to. Because the people who experience racism, misogyny, ableism, queerphobia, transphobia, classism, etc., are exhausted. So why shouldn't their, quote, allies be? Maybe how exhausted you are is a good measure of how well you're doing this work. And that is Mia McKenzie.
I would say not necessarily a good measure, a possible measure. Because mm-hmm. you could be exhausted because we have to keep telling you to step back, shut up, listen, pay attention, and you're not getting it.
Yes.
Sometimes people get exhausted from those actions as well. I really appreciate the fact that not only does Mia call out the behaviors, but she calls out a personality. Having had the opportunity to participate some years ago in Washington, D.C. at a race and reconciliation conference that included Tim Weiss, having met him, having used some of his material, having had his material rebuffed by one of the actual creators of the said material, it's necessary to call out personalities who, in the pursuit of either ego aggrandizement or misguided attempts at aligning themselves to be an ally, overstep boundaries, muddy the water, don't get the work done, make it hard for other people to get the work done, misconstrue what the work is.
Yes.
You know, so I'm really glad that Mia called out behaviors. And as you and she said earlier, this is not an inexhaustible list, but called out personalities so that people can recognize what we're talking about. I also want to call out the fact that in some recent articles, there have been efforts to call out the progressive movement itself at large, and to say maybe one of the reasons we're not making the kind of expansive progress we could in bringing in minorities, people of color, other human identities is that we are too quick to limit what actual progressive behavior or progressive goals look like. So, for example, and this is a painful one for some people because I know they're thinking, is she ever going to let this rest? But when the young black activists took over the stage after their quote-unquote allotted time in Seattle, Washington at the Bernie Sanders campaign and were trying to get their needs heard, they were quickly marginalized and told, okay, get off the stage, you done had your time. And they quickly replied and rebutted with, no, we haven't, you haven't heard us, and this is not let us go up there and speak our piece and not see our issues put on the list. So there was a lot of criticism leveled toward these young black activists who were told they didn't, who were called troublemakers, agitators, because they didn't want to quote unquote wait their turn anymore. And as I think you specifically mentioned, Cecil, you know, power doesn't give up anything without a fight. So first, this is what agitation looks like. Second, power was doing the thing that it always does. It argues that you're illegitimate when you challenge it. And third, it illustrated the need for our progressive movement to be more expansive in how it determines what goals are, what are legitimate goals, so that maybe we can move ahead. And that's what I thought I was hearing people articulating at the Poor People's Campaign last week, that there's going to be an attempt to both listen, but more importantly, clear space for new voices to articulate and for the progressive movement as a whole to begin to, I don't want to say absorb, what is the word I want? Accept the fact that the white progressive ideal of legitimate goals is a limited list. It doesn't encompass.
Yes, I think that's true, and I think part of it means figuratively and literally getting off the stage.
Hello.
And you mentioned in describing the example of the challenge of a mainstream progressive organization bringing in and filling the marginalized group. I don't think it's so much as bringing them in as for those of us with privilege to follow the leadership and the direction. So instead of bringing them in, we need to go where they are.
And that's true, and I sit corrected.
Well, and it's a challenge because to move ourselves off of the center stage is challenging, regardless of our quote unquote good motives. You're listening to KBOO, and you know I want to remind you that you can be a part of an exciting Kickstarter campaign that needs your support today. We're talking about building a strong infrastructure for the next generation of culture workers and DJs and organizers and activists. And you can participate in this fantastic Kickstarter campaign. So why don't you go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and see how you will participate. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil.
I'm Celeste.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're talking about what we need to do as a progressive movement to step back and allow other voices to step up.
And we especially want to hear from young people and from minorities or I say other human identity groups, you know. But basically what I'm saying is not that white allies and associates, and yes, there's quotations all around allies, can't call in, but be cognizant of the need to step back. So call your friends that you know and tell them it's their turn to talk. 503-231-8187, and we'll go to the numbers.
Good morning, April.
Good morning.
Morning. I called in just as soon as I heard Cecil ask, you know, what would that look like if we had a movement where, you know, poor people or the people who are marginalized actually got to speak. And I love, Celeste, that you just said all the, you know, about people, us being able to take the stage and not being silenced. So what I think it would look like if we were able to actually speak and be part of the movement and guide it is I've had so many experiences where well-meaning friends and, I guess, quote-unquote allies who have helped in the past, it's like I will say something, I will state something instead of saying, well, what do you mean by that, or trying to find out a little more about it, or trying to understand. They start quoting the rules at me. They start saying, well, you know, that's all going to work out because we have this legal system or because we have this or that, not realizing that it doesn't work for a lot of us.
Amen.
Yeah, and that's just like telling you to shut up.
So when you're telling them this is not working for us, I'm assuming they're not hearing you. Are they giving you any reason why they're persisting? And I mean, that's like the proverbial beating your head up against the wall, both for you and for them, because they're not learning because they keep giving you the same irrelevant answer. And so I'm wondering what the disconnect might be, you know, in your perception.
Well, I think the disconnect is that they're, one, that they maybe don't want to really think about what's not working and why it's not working, and that they are so privileged they really believe that it does work because that's been their experience. So what usually happens is they just explain to me why it would work, and then they say, you know, something like, oh, have a good day, and walk away. And I'm just like floored, you know. I'm not going to run after them and try to explain it without thinking it through. It's, and it just, I mean, I usually don't talk to them next time, but you kind of, I kind of go along, you know, not saying anything to dispute what they say, or not, if they don't want to listen, I'm not going to get in their face because they've been helpful.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a no-win situation.
You know, I have an acquaintance that I made, and the couple really got turned off and argumentative toward me when I was trying to explain why I find Portland the best and the worst place I've ever lived, and the reason it's the worst place I've ever lived is because it's the most racist place I've ever been, and I've been all around the country and in about 45 of our wonderful 50 states. And they didn't want to hear it. And so I explained, I said, these are some reasons why. And I just laid down reasons. I gave them, I probably gave them a little bit of an overflow, you know, just to make sure they heard me. And I felt like you did. It's like, first you're going to ask me why. And then when I tell you, you want to rebut my personal experiences.
Right.
As if this was an opinion or something I saw on a big screen or read in a book and didn't quite perceive it properly. You know, and so my answer to them is the next time they say it this is why it's going to work, I would tell them, no, it won't, and you won't listen, and you're part of the problem why it doesn't work. And then you leave. Because, you know, and it's not to shut them down, but I'm hoping what happens is it's kind of the inverse of what they do to you. They drop this bon mot and then they run off like, you know, they've answered all your problems.
That's,
it's like,
true.
You know, you tell them, no, this is why it doesn't, and leave. And maybe that'll plant a seed in them so that they'll think next time.
That's true. And even if it doesn't, it gives you more of a feeling of power than, and you know, and being willing to try again.
Yes, and it doesn't take away your power. And it's not to be argumentative, but one of the things that was pointed out in Mia's article that Cecil wrote is the exhaustion that comes from having to continuously educate.
Yes, definitely.
So I'm right there with you, and
thank
you.
Yeah, there are even places I've stopped going because people just, they ask me the same thing over and over, and I'm explaining every time I go there, and it's just exhausting.
Yes. Yes, I totally feel you. But be encouraged today because, you know, for one moment in time, you got somebody who got you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the show, you guys.
Thank you, April, for calling. I was watching a awards show last night, and the MCs were commenting on the hashtag Me Too movement, and you know, have to be make jokes and haha and stuff like that. And one was a person identified as female, and one identified as male, and the woman was saying, while the hashtag Me Too movement is so important because women are stating their truth without, and the male MC jumped in and started, explaining what she's...
Mansplaining.
Mansplaining. in a joking way, I mean, they were joking on making a comedy skit on the habit of males' tendencies in terms of mansplaining. So hopefully if it has settled into the mass culture, maybe movement is possible. Our number is 503-231-8187, and let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, James.
Good morning. One thing I would like allies to know is if you get into this work, you are going to get your feelings hurt. It's going to happen. And, you know, the best way I can explain it is like a relationship counseling or marriage counseling where y'all been fighting for a while and nobody's hearing each other's side. Mm-hmm. And then you finally have, you as a man who is, you know, you're the problem, but you don't know you're the problem. And so, or the party who's guilty of this is the problem. And so, but instead of having to hear about 1 or 2 or 3 years of baggage, you're having to hear about 520 years of baggage. And it's all going to come out. You got to realize that, you know, while you might have some friends who are on your side and are supported, you're going to meet a lot of people who are just angry. And they're angry because they ain't been heard, and you're the first set of non-marginalized ears to hear their problem. Oh, you're going to hear something. And it's not going to be stuff that's going to make you comfortable either. It's going to be hurtful, but it's that point of self-reflection where the greatest turnaround is going to be found, and you have to be able to survive that. You know, as a man who's been in a situation with my wife where we had dated before and I did some bad things to her the first time we dated, I had to hear about it the second time around. But if you really want to make this relationship work, you have to listen, and then you have to act on what you're hearing regardless of how uncomfortable it makes you.
Indeed.
Because this, I mean, it just blows my mind. It's like somebody saying they want to be a surgeon but they don't want to get blood on them. Like, give me all the glory of what it takes to be a masterful surgeon, but I don't want to mess up my scrubs.
Absolutely.
Or like going to a Mexican restaurant that's owned by white people, and you get the Mexican enough experience just to feel like you had something cultural, but not enough to bring something into the lunchroom that's going to smell up everything when you reheat it. You know, like, it's like just enough. And we have to, you know, it's like making anything good. You got to put your whole foot in it.
Indeed. You know, one of the things I think is really important for us to realize, and I think we forget about this when we're trying to deal with this power sharing, is that the issue of white supremacy in this country, and especially with regard to political change, is one of the same dynamic of domestic abuse, okay? Complete with psychological and physical damage. So it would be like being in a relationship with a partner who has been physically abused. And you have to handle it differently. Yes, you can show love and compassion and be there for that person, but it's a different relationship than if you had been in with two people who have never been in that kind of abuse dynamic. And I think sometimes when it comes to trying to sit down and determine social and cultural and political goals, our potential white allies forget that we're coming from a history of abuse. That's just all there is to it. You can't describe it any other way. It's abuse. And so you wouldn't jump into a relationship with any entity, whether it be, you know, a broken plant or a damaged pet or your own child who had been beat up or hurt or your partner who had been assaulted. You wouldn't jump into it with a cavalier attitude. And so allies hear us, you know, and like you said, I like what you said, you got to put your whole foot in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really the hardest thing to get across to people, because you, like you said, it's like a domestic abuse. So when you bring it up, it's like, well, why should I have to be responsible for things I don't remember? You know, something like, oh, why should I be responsible for things that I did, you know, that somebody else did to you, you know? And it's like, you know, maybe just short, the other thing is like, white supremacy is like a trust fund. You know, the only people who can cancel a trust fund are the beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Nobody else outside of the people who benefit from it are the ones who can cancel it. We can fight against it, but that's another thing folks have to remember. That's why it's so pervasive. That's why it's so hard to put a finger on it, because it's like it's invested into everything. It's like putting $20 and then investing that $20 and taking that money you invested from there and putting it in everything. But instead of looking at money, you're looking at a cultural trust fund that ensures the success of white people, regardless of levels of achievement. And you know that. And so when you're trying to tackle it, you have to tackle it from all angles and realize that you're benefiting from it. It's just like a trust fund. You benefit from it whether you put anything into it or not.
Well, that's true.
So, I mean, it's those are some of the things that I have such a hard time explaining to folks, because I grew up, my grandma was white, and I had to sit there and listen to her berate Spanish-speaking Mexicans at Burger King because they got her order wrong, and saying, well, maybe if you didn't have so many damn Mexicans back there who spoke some English, that maybe I'd get my order right. And like, well, I'm Mexican, Grandma. She'd be like, well, Dad, you're different.
Yeah.
You know, I had to listen to that growing up my whole life. My grandma hated Mexicans and Russians. You know, so it's like, you know, and that's
and
thing,
that's
you
abuse. Know. That's abuse.
Yeah. So
hey, thank you so much for sharing today. And from the conversation that you and Celeste just had in terms of talking of abuse, I would like to refer you to a website, Everyday Feminism, and an article particularly by Jamie Oot, who has an article called Five Common Behavior Cis Men May Not Realize Are Abusive and How to Stop Them. And Jamie refers to many things that you talked about with Celeste in terms of things like emotional manipulation, being dominant and aggressive, and how those things, refusing to listen, and others, which perpetuate that type of abusive situation. So thank you so much for calling.
Yes.
No, thank you, and thank you for that referral. You know, I realize my space is a cisgender male, and I realize there's a lot of things I still need to overcome, so I appreciate this conversation. Thank you for allowing people who have a hard time being heard to have a place to speak. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio with the fantastic host, Celeste Carey.
And Cecil Prescott. And you know, I want to send a thank you out really quickly to all the people who financially support KBOO, because we owe them a debt of gratitude, because More Talk Radio wouldn't be here if we didn't have financial supporters of the entire radio station, KBOO Portland. So we are looking to see and hear and feel that support come through with our Kickstarter campaign. So we want to make sure that you know about that. If you want to be involved, this is your opportunity to do it in a different fashion. We need your support today. Just join a KBOO.fm/Kickstarter and help build a strong infrastructure for all voices to be heard. 503-231-8187. Join in the conversation. It's early. Don't wait to the last moment now. For those of you who are thinking, well, wait a minute, I just got to brew my coffee or my tea. No, come on, make that call right now and walk back to, you know, your hot pot and get your beverage.
And as you're doing this, I also want to also refer to you, Mia. I mentioned that there are, you know, where do I start? What do I do? Well,
oh, yeah.
there mm-hmm. is.
How do I do it?
The sauce is all over the places. So just keep looking. And for those of us with privilege, be observant, and we need to know how to check our privilege. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Cody. Cody, that's you.
Hello?
Hello, yeah. Cody?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now we can.
Okay. Good morning, Cecil and Celeste.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to get you guys' input on something.
Okay.
Every time I get into, like, the subject matter of economics and inherited wealth and why black people may be dealing with more like disdain and racism as a result of our place in society being here so long, with my other progressive friends, things get really quiet and it turns into the twilight zone.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And this one fellow, I was shocked to find out, worked at Silicon Valley and had access. And he was like, yeah, you know, we're out here protesting, blah, 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 blah. And I went, oh, that's cool. Are you hiring a lot of black women at your particular Silicon Valley? And this is like a day after I realized what was going on at Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked away from me. And I mean, I would like to get you guys' input about, I'd like to get your input when it comes up to the economic thing, because it's one testing for somebody, but it's like everything goes back to normal after the protest.
Yes.
Does that make any sense?
It does. That depends on how you mean normal. If you mean everything goes back to the way it was, yes,
yeah.
I certainly hear you. You know, it's like, that's like, dude, seriously, or woman, seriously, or whatever you, however you want to preface it, it's like, put your money where your mouth is.
Well, I think in part of it is why the person became silent, because protesting was more a philosophical thing to do, you know, in your lunch break or whatever. But when you require a person to make sacrifices, and for most people, many people, that's in your pocket. Yeah, I'm going to get silent because I have my own to protect. That's the challenge. What do you do? I mean, how do you help move that person to be able to give up the power?
Well, I would not let them walk away. It's like, excuse me, hello. We were having a conversation. Did I touch a nerve? You know, come back here and finish the conversation.
Well, it got so strange because, you know, a lot of people think that black people are where they at as a result of their own volition.
Yes.
And I had to explain to him, this isn't about slavery, because he kept bringing slavery up. I'm going, no, I mean, what about when blacks came back from World War II and they couldn't get their housing loans?
GI Bill did not apply to black people.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I get a lot when I start talking about money and economics and why black people are associated with poverty and why they're there in America in the first place. So I'll let you go.
Okay.
Well, you know, I do want to encourage you, even though you're gone, by saying that one of my brother-in-laws is just adamant about the whole thing of creating wealth for the family. And I know my father was, because he was not happy when nobody wanted to live in the house that he had, you know, he had gone through a lot of trouble to purchase. And it was just what it was the albatross around the neck. And so it was going to be more problems than it was worth. But it did make a big difference in helping us get established. But, you know, That's one of those conversations that I think we're going to have to start having salons about, and just take movies that showcase how wealth has been stolen and put in various quote unquote trust funds, to borrow the earlier phrase, and show how it's really important that people put their money where their mouth is. It's not a protest if you're not making a sacrifice.
Certainly.
Well, you know, it's exercise.
Well, what I'll say is that there are a lot of people I assume that are working class, and mm-hmm. I discovered that they were more like limousine liberals type of thing, and it kind of blew me away. So, I'll let you go with that.
Well, wait. You have to define what you mean by limousine liberal.
No. Well, you're saying
they weren't rich, but if you saw them, their lifestyle, and in relation to the people who they were trying to help,
Were you saying they were working class, or they were limousine liberals? It was unclear to me.
I guess limousine liberals, you know, $200,000.
Yeah, no, I mean, how they define themselves. Did they consider themselves, you know, working class, or were they limousine liberals?
Well, see, I would have never known just by looking at how they held themselves, because they kept a low profile, they wore certain clothing that I would assume working class people. Oh. And then I got to know them, and I went, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, my head starts to scratch. And I mean, I'm happy. No. You know, that they're there and all that. You know, I'm happy for them, but, you know, I had to explain to them, you know, black people aren't being picked on because of their melanin. Mm-hmm. They're being picked on for economic reasons, and they always have been.
Right.
But it's like, they get really strange when I bring up economics with my other, you know, progressive friends.
I think it's time for us to start planning salons and starting to have some workshops and trainings to explain what this actually looks like. And so you're showing us some of the fault lines that need some work. Thank you.
I want to thank you so much. I also want to encourage you is to take care of yourself. I think the first caller, was it April, who mentioned in terms of exhaustion of doing this work. And I want to note another article by Courtney Ariel, who says, you know, I'm writing this in hopes that it can be used to lighten the loads of marginalized folks, keeping in mind that not all marginalized people want to engage in the ally conversation.
Amen.
And that is perfect as well. For those who do, my prayer is that when someone asks you the question, can I be a stronger ally, you might choose to save your breath and energy and send this in its place. And it's an article that Courtney writes about what allies should do. You know, things like listen more, talk less. You don't have to be have something to say all the time. You don't have to post something on social media that points to how liberal, how aware, how cool, how good you are. You are a lovely human and amazing. You have also had the microphone for most of the time, for a very long time, and it will be good to give that microphone to someone else who is living in a different experience. And for everyone of every three opinions shared by a person of color in your life, try to resist the need to respond with a better or different insight about something you read or listened to as it relates to their sharing. Try just to listen and sit with someone else's experience. And that's so difficult, I think. Take a breath, Cecil. Don't speak. Listen to what they're saying. And don't jump in. And that's a challenge. It's not only a discipline, but it's also a way in which we, those who are privileged, are able to share the space with others. Our number is 503-231-8187. Give us your viewpoint. Whether you are, and what was the word, the term that Mia used, and not ally, but in terms of, at this moment I'm working as
At this moment, I'm associated with temporarily. I'm trying to be a better person, shut my mouth, listen, and help, you know, something along those lines.
And not just a title. I'm an ally, you know, with a button.
Right? Oh, good golly. And, you know, definitely don't get that tattooed on, you know. Don't do that. And you know, I think one of the problems is that too often we forget that part of that whole ideology of white supremacy is that whatever comes out of the mouth of white culture is the standard. You know, whatever comes out of the mind of white culture or from the hand of white culture is a standard. One of the articles that I had been sharing with Douglas Tsoi was that there have been some recent challenges to this whole idea of what actually constitutes academic rigor.
Yes.
You know, and that academic rigor in and of itself has racist implications, and it denies that there are other ways of having excellence, that there are other definitions of excellence and other sources of excellence, and that it is not gender or race or economically determined. And so...
So we have to move beyond the dead white men canon?
But yes.
Oh.
Fire that cannon.
Oh. Okay.
And then decommission it.
Decommission it, yeah. Okay.
You know, there's so much more to it. I mean, I remember the first time I had a discussion with someone about African literature. And they had the audacity to look at me as if to say, African literature? You mean Afro-American literature? I said, no, African literature. What's that? Like, okay, well, what do you think literature is? Well, you know, and I got a totally Eurocentric definition, and I'm thinking, okay, but hold on, wait a minute, stop for just a second. You can accept the fact that there is Greek literature, or you can accept the fact that there is Japanese or any other kind of country that's not immediately within that European theater. But when I say African literature, is it because I'm talking about the continent and I didn't mention the country, or what is it that makes your brain just stop and freeze? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's amazing at how many things we look at in terms of one lens. It's like all of a sudden all tissues are clinics.
Yes.
All tissues are clinics.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, no, they're not.
Huh.
And so we should welcome the fact that in our pursuit of political progress and cultural progress and economic progress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there are going to be other definitions. And our white allies, you know, you don't have to speak. As a matter of fact, applause and hear-hears and bring in people who you know are marginalized to the stage is some of the best things you can do.
You're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We would welcome your thoughts and comments on being an ally. What does it mean to give up space? Earlier, I mentioned some reflection by Courtney Ariel, and I just want Celestia's reflection on what Courtney writes here. Courtney writes, please try not to. I can't believe that something like this would happen in this day and age. Your way into being an ally when atrocity like the events of Charleston or Charlottesville or Portland happen. People of color has been aware of this kind of hatred and violence in America for centuries, and it belittles our experience for you to show up 300 years late to the oppression party, suddenly caring about the world. Don't get me wrong, I welcome you. I want for you to come into a place of awareness. However, your shock and outrage at the existence of racism in America echoes the fact that you have lived in an entire life with the luxury of indifference about the lives of marginalized, disenfranchised folks. Please take several seats.
Okay. Not only would I go back to that conversation I had about the couple I met who were disbelieving of some of the things that happened to me now. Mm-hmm. One of the guys had an audacity. I mean, the husband had the audacity to relegate it to anecdotes. And I'm saying, you can call it anecdotal, maybe, to Portland's history, but you can't call it anecdotal to my life. I'm telling you, this is my life, you know. But here's something that I thought was really interesting is I had a conversation when I was traveling and visiting family recently, and in Chicago at the Amtrak station in one of the little rooms, I was remarking on a picture that was taken between 1941 and 45, and that was of a black man and a white man sitting on the same bench in the train station. And I remarked to the woman who was the staff there, I said, this is an interesting photograph because you have a black man and a white man sitting in the same place, and I'm pretty sure there was still segregation there. And we were able to have a conversation and figure out that it must have been a military setting, which was still amazing to me because Truman had not signed the desegregation policy yet. So, you know, that is looking at the past through a historic lens. But for people to turn around and then turn and say, well, I can't believe people are getting hung still, she told me stories of things that she has experienced coming from Mississippi of the same types of atrocities. And we both remarked that had it not been for technological advances of cell phones, etc., people would not believe it because they would swear we were lying, yes. You know, and that's part of that. It's either too traumatic for us to believe, you know, line of reasoning, or, oh, you people are making this up line of reasoning, which is still belittling and refusing to validate. So, you know, that's another conversation. That's another topic for More Talk Radio. We want to go to our caller who's been patiently holding.
Good morning,
Frank. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to both of you. This is Frank out in Yamhill. Hello.
How are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing well. A great program.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say the reference you made to academic rigor, I thought that was spot on.
Oh, well, thank you. What's your experience with it?
Oh, I've spent 40 years in the academy.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's so true, and often you know, definitions of academic rigor and scholarship and so forth, you know, can be very, very important, call to excellence, but frequently Eurocentric and frequently a form of hegemony and frequently shutting down voices. So I'll stop there and let you folks share.
Well, first, thanks for calling and validating it with your experiences. And it's really helpful to have allies bring these kinds of examples to the table and validating that they see the machinery of oppression. I think too often, just like what Cecil and I were just talking about with regard to the some of the physical atrocities that we've experienced as a culture, people don't want to believe it. And when we talk about other aspects of the machinery, like, for example, the academic rigor and the definitions thereof, is really important for others to say, yes, this is part of the machinery that I'm asked to uphold or support and build, because it adds not only the extra eyes and the extra shoulders to the wheel, but more importantly, it points out that this is not imagination. This is not the ravings of people who are not able to attain, don't have the skills to attain, and are just haters.
I couldn't agree more. My grandfather understood this, my mother's side. He said a PhD too often simply means to be piled higher and deeper.
Yes, I've heard that very much.
Granddaddy was a wise man. Thank you, Frank.
Uh-huh.
Take care. Great program. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Thank you so much, all of you who are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. We hope you are... and we invite you to go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and join our exciting campaign. Stay tuned for OMO Variety Hour, a look at the rise on authoritarianism. Following that is Locus Focus, Health Watch, Making Contact on Radio Zine. Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you, Cecil. And thank you for all of KBOO's allies who have supported KBOO these past 50 years for creating community on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
For decades, KBOO News and Public Affairs has welcomed radical and spirited activists in the Northwest and beyond. KBOO is central to connecting the world to what is happening in Portland and the Northwest. We put the mic in everyone's hands. Help amplify the stories of people in your own backyard, invest in future media makers, and join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the White Ally Toolkit Workshop on Saturday, February 17th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Vancouver in Vancouver, Washington. The White Ally Toolkit Project, led by Dr. David Kampt, focuses specifically on helping allies have more effective encounters with people who are skeptical that racism is a problem. Utilizing contemporary research on persuasion, this interactive workshop leaves participants with concrete skills to advance racial equity. Again, that's the White Ally Toolkit Workshop on Saturday, February 17th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Vancouver, 4505 East 18th Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Fix-It Fair on Saturday, February 24th, 9:30 a.m. at Madison High School in Portland. The Fix-It Fair helps you learn simple ways to save money and connect with resources. Join your neighbors and talk to the experts about how to spend less and stay healthy. There will be exhibits and hourly workshops on water and energy savings, food and nutrition, neighborhood and community resources, weatherizing your home, transportation, a repair cafe, and much more, with childcare and lunch provided. Again, that's the Fix-It Fair on Saturday.